You are listening to part two of our interview with Dr. Shanti Moling, a renowned gynecologist and gynecological surgeon on the Women's Mosaic on KXRW-FM.
I'm Elizabeth Madrigal.
And I'm Karen Morrison.
And we're the hosts of the Women's Mosaic, where the real lives of women and girls are shared and celebrated.
In this space, we honor the feminine and amplify the voices of women speaking their truth.
The Women's Mosaic delves into the real lives of local women through story-rich interviews, learning what works and what doesn't to enhance the health and well-being of women in our community.
We strive to share unique perspectives, resource sharing, and instructions on how to be kind by any means necessary. Welcome to the Women's Mosaic.
Joined by Dr. Shanti Moling. She is a board-certified and fellowship-trained gynecologist and gynecologic surgeon. Welcome to the show, Dr. Moling.
Thank you so much. It's a great pleasure to be here with you.
Now, this is a question coming from, this is so me. When might non-surgical medical therapies be most appropriate and why?
So, I think that if you are young, you can't afford surgery, you don't have insurance, or, for example, during pandemic, it was hard to get surgery. There might be periods of time where delaying surgery is appropriate. And in those times, it might be reasonable to use medical management. And I didn't mention, you know, there are pain managements too, but different gabapentin, Neurontin, pregabalin, Lyrica, amitriptyline. These are some of the nerve modulators. We also have non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. We have all these pain treatments as well. But then you're chronically on a pain treatment. But those are options too. And so there are times when you may not be ready to jump into surgery, or you may be caring for an elderly parent, or lots of reasons. I personally think if you have endo and you are in debilitating pain, you can't have sex, you have rectal pain every time you go to the bathroom, it's a good idea to proceed with surgery if you can possibly do it.
Right.
This kind of pain is debilitating. When I see patients waking up in the recovery room and I say, yeah, there was endo and we removed it, they cry. They're so relieved after years of not understanding why something was taking over their body 2 weeks out of every month.
You know, this thing that women have, that we are, you know, going to suffer, and that suffering is normal to this degree. I know as a young girl, I mean, my pain in my family, I was the only one who had any period pain. And I didn't have endometriosis, but I did have what I learned after having a child, I had the equivalent of back labor. And so I don't know why. I mean, it stopped after I had my first child. So are there any times when you might have endometriosis, which I wasn't diagnosed with and don't know if I did or didn't have it, when it does spontaneously cure itself?
You know, we don't have any studies on that, but I have a friend who was my college roommate, and I am certain she had endometriosis. Just like her monthly time would come, and I would know she'd be in her back in her bedroom. I would make sure she had plenty of time for baths in the bathtub for hours, and like bring her whatever she needed. Very aware, she was absolutely miserable. Something was going on. And later, in retrospect, it was quite clear to me that it was endometriosis. She was never formally diagnosed, but, and this is anecdotal, what she did was she radically changed her diet and nutrition and went on a full vitamin protocol, to which she stayed on to this day. And she never had surgery. Her periods became very tolerable. And she also never had children. So I don't know if she had infertility or not. And she's now menopausal, and so she's doing really well, and she did very well in her life. And I cannot imagine that she did not have endometriosis, given what I witnessed in terms of pain and suffering during her periods. There are these people who manage it and seem to move through it. And in the old school days, doctors used to say, just get pregnant and this will go away. But there can be other causes of pain, a tight muscle or other things that we can't quite identify. And then you have a pregnancy and massive hormonal progesterone, which counteracts endometriosis, and you felt better. It's really hard to excise after someone's had ablation, because the tissue becomes fibrotic and scarred, and they still have pain, and it's burned, so that when I send it to pathology, it's a little harder to diagnose whether they actually had endo also. We're lucky that in this state we have a couple of excision surgeons. There are a couple in Washington as well, farther north of you. But most states don't have excision surgeons. So I want to add one other thing that maybe is on your list, and you tell me if it is or not. But one other treatment that many surgeons, gynecologic, just regular gynecologists offer for endometriosis is hysterectomy and removal of the ovaries, even in a young person. And this does not cure endometriosis. In fact, some of my nightmare surgical cases have been in patients who had their uterus and ovaries removed. They continued to have terrible pain. They kept going back. They were taken, they're young, they were taken off hormones, they're menopausal, they're 28, they have no uterus, no ovaries, they're debilitating pain. And what they have is still endometriosis. So I have seen where it was so invasive that it invaded the ureter and the bowel next to each other, fusing them. You have to remove a segment of each of those things. After hysterectomy, after removal of the ovaries, because the endometriosis was not addressed. So hysterectomy is not a cure for endometriosis. Oophorectomy, removing the ovaries, is not a cure for endometriosis. So, I don't think there are any pros to ablation. And I think that sometimes there's a reason to do a hysterectomy, but not for just to treat the endo. You've got to remove the endometriosis.
So you have to actually remove the lesions,
Correct.
not corresponding organs, but wherever if the lesions are in the diaphragm, you're still going to have pain in your diaphragm if you have a hysterectomy.
Correct.
Okay. I think we got that one. That is
Thank
really
you.
good information, Radioland.
Very good. Very good. In your practice, you specialize in excision surgery. Can you talk about what that entails? Which patients benefit most from it, and its effectiveness long term?
So, let's start with which patients benefit. I think all patients with endometriosis benefit from excision. And they also benefit from having a surgery, one surgery, where I look in there, diagnose it, and remove it at the same time. Not like a diagnosis, oh, go see someone who can do the excision. I'm going to do you both at the same time. And so, what is it? What is this thing called excision? So, It can be done laparoscopically or robotically. I would not think anyone would need to have a big open cut to have this done anymore these days. I used to do more laparoscopy, and now I do more robotic surgery, and it's basically robotic assisted laparoscopy. So both have little tiny cuts, little keyhole cuts, and instruments and a camera go through these little cuts. So it's a long tube camera and long sort of chopstick-like instruments. With on the robot, they have little graspers and scissors, and then you use electrosurgery to cut things. So you can burn a vessel, for example, so it doesn't bleed, but then I still use those scissors to remove the lesion. Okay, so then using this camera and technology, I will thoroughly review the whole abdomen and pelvis. And then under the ovaries, behind the tubes, behind the uterus, in front of the uterus, everywhere that I can possibly see, check the rectum, appendix, and then remove all of the lesions. On the bowel, you can shave a lesion sometimes, but when it's a full occluding thick lesion, sometimes I'll have a colorectal surgeon come and do a partial bowel resection. Sometimes I'll do a small disc excision where I can just remove a little lump and sew the bowel up, and it's not big enough to create an occlusion of the bowel. So basically, I use these tiny instruments and this brilliant visualization through this camera and identify the areas and then remove the disease. And I do very wide margins. It's called peritonectomy. And that wide margin ensures that I get all the microscopic disease that even my eyes cannot see. Sometimes the lesions are somewhat hidden, but because I'm doing a very careful preoperative exam, I'll know to look more carefully in those areas and find disease that is less obvious.
You're listening to the Women's Mosaic on KXRW. We've been talking to renowned gynecologist and gynecologic surgeon, Dr. Shanti Moling, about the treatment of endometriosis in women. We're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and then continue our conversation.
Shriners Children's has opened a new pediatric orthopedic clinic in Vancouver. The clinic provides evaluation and follow-up care for children and teens with orthopedic conditions, including sports-related injuries such as sprains and fractures. Care is available regardless of a family's ability to pay. The Vancouver Shriners Children Clinic is located at 900 Northeast 139th Street, Suite 204, and is open Monday through Friday. Information about services and scheduling is available at shrinerschildrens.org/Vancouver Clinic.
KXRW programming like this is made possible with the support of The Columbian, proud to be Southwest Washington's leading news source. Since 1920, the Campbell family has owned and operated The Columbian and ensured its award-winning news coverage. For the most thorough daily coverage of local news, national news, and local sports, both in print and online, and for subscription information, visit columbian.com. That's columbian.com.
Thanks for staying with us. You're listening to the Women's Mosaic on KXRW. Today, our guest is Dr. Shanti Moling, a specialist in endometriosis treatment and gynecological surgery. Our conversation with her continues.
So I think what you're telling me is you wouldn't go to someone who wasn't experienced in this.
No, but if you lived in a place where that was all you had,
right.
You could have a laparoscopy for diagnosis. You could find out if you have it, and you could ask that person to take pictures everywhere,
right.
And not ablate, because I think the ablation is counterproductive, but they could take photographs everywhere. And I have a patient, for example, who went to a surgeon, a gynecologic doctor in, I think, maybe Eugene or somewhere near Eugene. And that doctor, that surgeon, went inside, saw that it was very advanced endometriosis involved. You know, it adheres, it causes scarring of everything together. She took photographs of everything so that I could see exactly what was going on. This included diaphragm disease and also disease over the pericardium, over where, and I've removed it myself from this area as well, in the past, but most surgeons will not do that. And I also now work with a very, very excellent cardiothoracic surgeon here in Portland. So he is able to go video thoracoscopy into the lung when disease is above. So this is what happens. But she went to a doctor who doesn't do excision, but she got a full, complete understanding and diagnosis so that she would know it would be reasonable to go farther afield or maybe pay out of network to be able to have the proper surgery.
Right.
I would say that in my practice, most patients have so many side effects from these hormonal treatments, they don't really want to be on them. And in my experience, the excision itself, most of the time, does the trick.
Right.
In the literature, and probably in my own practice, there is about a 20% recurrence of pain. I would say that when I see some recurrent disease, it is usually because the person wanted to keep their uterus. Now I sound like I'm contradicting myself, but hand in hand is a condition called adenomyosis that goes with endometriosis. And adenomyosis, some people say adenomyosis, I always say adenomyosis, is when you have a similar condition in the wall of the uterus. So this creates an enlarged uterus and heavy menstrual bleeding that is quite painful. When you have adenomyosis and you remove all the endometriosis, you can still have some adjacent spread of disease to bowel or bladder from the uterus. Tricky. And so, in fertility sparing cases where someone really is trying to conserve their uterus for pregnancy, will not take the uterus out, even if they have adenomyosis. And sometimes that continues their pain or can spread some disease.
So there's no perfect solution, is there, for everybody?
It's a really, really tough thing. If
Right.
someone is perimenopausal and they have done their childbearing and they have terrible endometriosis, it might not be a bad idea to remove uterus, ovaries, and all the endometriosis, depending on how bad their disease is.
Right.
Endometriosis is more than a painful condition. Can you talk about the short and long-term medical consequences for women living with untreated endometriosis?
Yeah, so I mentioned at the beginning that it is also a systemic disease and it creates a very heightened chronic level of inflammation. So, for example, we know that patients with endometriosis have an increased risk of cardiovascular disease, heart attack later in life, probably stroke also, although I haven't seen that data. We also know that associated, not necessarily causing or being caused by, but associated with endometriosis are other conditions that we see very frequently, such as Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is a collagen vascular type of disease where there's hypermobility. We see POTS, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, and that is a condition where there's lightheadedness and fainting and vascular insufficiency. So we see that very frequently with endometriosis. There's an association with celiac disease, There's a mild association with even MS and a number of other inflammatory conditions. There is an association, but not necessarily causal. But some of these more inflammatory, inflammation-mediated disease processes, like cardiovascular disease, like bowel issues, like interstitial cystitis, these may directly be caused by chronic inflammation from endometriosis.
So it's important to treat it.
And important to address that underlying degree of inflammation. And that's one of the things I've really started doing, is encouraging my patients to really look at diet and lifestyle and a certain short list of supplements that are anti-inflammatory.
So does menopause, I mean, you talked about, you know, putting people on medication in some cases that puts them into a menopausal state. So does menopause have any effect on endometriosis?
For some patients, it may decrease their pain. However, it does not necessarily cure it or end it. And part of the reason is that endometriosis lesions themselves have an enzyme called aromatase, and they make their own estrogens.
Ugh.
So they feed themselves, essentially.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah, right. So I have a book chapter that I wrote with one of my fellows a number of years ago, and Camille Ladani, and she's now in Wisconsin. But we wrote a chapter about menopause and endometriosis, and I myself have frequently seen menopausal patients still with a condition of pain, even if they're not menstruating, and they have active lesions on pathology when you biopsy them, even in the absence of taking hormone replacement. Another thing of note is that there is some, and this goes back to Karen's question, there is a small but real malignant transformation. And so over years, usually in maybe the fifth, sixth, seventh decades, you can see endometrioid types of cancers in the ovary, on the bowel, in the uterus from endometriosis.
Ugh, not
small,
good news.
Small percentage, but real, particularly in the presence of high dose hormone therapy, unopposed.
Right.
Unopposed, meaning they had a hysterectomy, so they just used estrogen and no progesterone because that's what they were told, and then they develop a cancer from the endometriosis.
What advice would you give to any woman who has symptoms of endometriosis but doesn't feel heard by her medical provider?
To keep trying, to keep reaching out, mm-hmm. to journal, to take a good list of what each of the issues are and how they go together, and to find another provider who listens. And sometimes the provider who finally listens will be a physical therapist, will be a naturopathic doctor, it will be maybe a nurse practitioner in the office. A lot of times that's who finally says, you know, this sounds like endometriosis, and the patient finally feels heard.
Right.
There are also online chat groups. I think Reddit has a lot of discussion about endometriosis. On Facebook, there's something called Nancy's Nook. Lots on Instagram too. And I have an Instagram page that I don't have time to post enough on, but I tried to make it very informative, and it's not very splashy, and that's okay. It's attempt to be educational.
Well, and we obviously need education on this. So are there any misconceptions people have about endometriosis or its treatment that you would like to correct?
I think that it's really important for people to understand that when you when patients say I had surgery, it didn't help, I had to have surgery again and again and again, it's because they had ablation surgery, almost always. And that if they finally get the real surgery, the appropriate excision, they don't usually, 80% of the time, they're not going to need a repeat surgery. And so finding ultimately the right type of treatment. And so understanding that recurrent surgeries is because mostly people are talking about ablation, not about actual excision surgery. I think that's one of the misconceptions. Another is that pregnancy cures it. I don't think pregnancy cures. We know that pregnancy does not cure it. Although sometimes it may help with painful periods, it doesn't cure endometriosis.
Right, right.
Before we go, is there anything we haven't asked you that you would like to share?
I would like to remind everyone that it is a very complex and debilitating disease, and that you're not alone, that 1 in 10 people that you know, 1 in 10 women that you know are going to have this same condition on some level, and that there are resources. There are groups online. There are doctors who will recognize it and treat you, and that there are things that can make your life better. Sometimes surgery, sometimes lifestyle modifications can adjust it a little bit, but that there are things that can be done and that you can be heard, and that it is a real thing, that having debilitating periods where you can't go to work, can't go to school, this is not normal. This is not something that an antidepressant and yoga treats. This is a real entity, and oftentimes a very complex entity. Sometimes it might be a smaller amount of disease still causing just as much pain, and that it can be mindfully and surgically addressed.
Thanks so much for being here, Dr. Moehling. This really is such valuable information for every woman to know, and for everybody who knows a woman who's suffering.
For more information about endometriosis treatment and pelvic surgery, please visit the website nwendometriosis.com. That's NW. Endometriosis is spelled endometriosis.com, or you can Google Dr. Shanti Moehling. That's Dr. Shanti Moehling, Shanti Moehling, Moehling.
You've been listening to the Women's Mosaic on KXRW. That concludes the second part of our interview with endometriosis specialist, Dr. Shanti Moehling. If you'd like to hear part one of this interview, visit KXRW-FM and click on the Women's Mosaic show page where you'll find the streaming link.
And that's our show. New episodes broadcast on the second and fourth Tuesdays, but you can stream any episode online anytime.
We are so grateful to our guests for sharing their knowledge and life experiences with us in their support of the health and well-being of women and girls.
So until next time, be kind by any means necessary.
And remember to honor your power.